Well, I did a one-on-one with Jim Norton when I was in New York City. Very interesting interview with a very funny guy. That's coming in a second. First, there's Geico.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hey, sports fans. It's Chris Howard, former Jacksonville Jaguar running back and 1997 National Championship running back from the University of Michigan. Get plugged in with me every week as I'll be breaking down the biggest topics in the world of sports and entertainment. Join me and my special guests for some honest conversations about sports and life when the cameras are no longer flashing. I'll also be breaking down weekly matchups for NFL and college football games. Be in the know, listen to, and follow Plugged In with Chris Howard now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From New York City, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Today, Adam sits down one-on-one with Jim Norton. And now, first it's bum cakes, then it's mud flaps, then it's bum cakes. Adam Carolla.
Jim Norton has joined me, comedian, podcaster, radio show host, host of SiriusXM, Jim Norton and Sam Roberts. That's 8 a.m. Eastern Time on SiriusXM Channel 103, and also a podcast, the Chip Chipperson podcast. And you can get that wherever you find finer podcasts. Good to see you, Jim.
Good to see you, too. Isn't it always weird? I hate talking before we're on the air. Like, it's weird right before we just kind of sit quietly because you're the same. Like, it's just, I don't want, ever want to talk before the air because I'm going to wind up saying something I should have said on the air.
Yeah, I agree. There's kind of two heads on that. One is like the Madonna. God, what was her documentary called?
Justify My Love or something?
It was like Kiss and Tell or something. We're going to find out the Madonna. Chris will look up the Madonna. The Madonna doc.
Truth or Dare?
Truth or Dare.
Truth or Dare.
Kiss or Tell. All right, Truth or Dare. And at some point, Warren Beatty, like, came backstage because he was like dating her at the time, and they're like, are we going to film this? And he sort of said, she doesn't do anything unless they film it. Like, that's her entire right. life is being filmed. I don't feel that way with you and I just feel like save it for air.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Like, almost like, because we haven't talked in a while, so anything, like, there's nothing worse than when somebody will walk into the studio and start talking about something. You're like, ah, shit, I would love to have talked about that on the air, but I feel like a liar going back and grabbing it.
But it's a radio thing. Like,
yeah.
Dr. Drew would come in and he'd go, oh, man, you can't believe it. And I'd go, save it for air. Just save it. Save it for air.
Always save it for the air. Because I've seen it done where all of a sudden you try to rehash something. Like, I've been in studios before where you'll talk before, and they go, so you were just saying. And you're like,
this is not going to suck.
Yeah.
So for you, I mean, was Opie and Anthony your first real kind of long-term radio gig?
Yeah, that was the only. I had never considered doing radio before. I was just doing stand-up for, I guess, 10 years at that point. And I wound up just kind of going in and fucking around and hanging out. And it would be funny and it would go well. And then they just started, Opie actually started to ask me to come in a little more. And then me and Lewis Black got arrested on the Voyeur bus. And that kind of gave me carte blanche to come in whenever I wanted, and then I eventually got hired. That's around 2000.
How'd the Voyeur bus story go?
It's funny. Somebody just gave me pictures recently. It was in December of, I think, 2000, and there was a Voyeur bus, a bunch of half-naked girls just flashing their tits to the passersby, like December 16th of, I think, 2000, Christmas rush. And me and Lewis and two other guys from our radio show got on that bus to, like, report back to Opie and Anthony. They were afternoons at the time. And we got pulled over because we were too close to Clinton's parade route. Mm-hmm. Like, they had a route right. sectioned off for Bill Clinton, and they stopped us and they arrested us and they threw us in jail. We spent the night in the tombs, which was traumatic. That was a traumatic night to be one night in jail. It convinced me I never want to go back.
Was Lewis complaining a lot? in the tombs?
Me and Lewis were both smokers at the time, and we both ran out of cigarettes. So, yeah, both of us were really nervous and on edge. And I remember we asked if we could stay in the same cell together. I mean, there was like nine of us that got arrested.
Right.
And nine men. And we asked the cop, could we be together? And he goes, what do you fucking think? You're going to protect each other? It was really mocking. And he was right. But everyone was so interested in why we were there, the other prisoners.
Uh-huh.
They were like, what did you guys do? Like, they couldn't believe what we got arrested for.
Right.
So the fact that we had an interesting story kind of kept anybody from hassling us.
Opie and Anthony were huge back in the day. And I could remember, I always remember Jimmy would tell me, oh, yeah, they're so good. They're so huge in New York. And then at some point when they got suspended or fired or whatever with pay, I remember that very clearly.
Yeah.
And I was like, I remember saying to Jimmy, that's my dream.
Yeah.
That's my dream right there, to be suspended with pay. And he was like, nah, you don't want that. It'll end your career. And I was like, yeah, but the notion of we still owe you several million dollars, now go home. My mentality where I grew up, you know, I was looking $7 an hour jobs, trying to get 10 bucks an hour.
Yeah.
The notion, you know, kind of, I had jobs where like, if you had to go to the dentist on Thursday for 2 hours, then you only worked 38 hours that week. Right. You didn't get paid.
Right.
That is extra. Those are 2 hours. You weren't here, dumb shit. We're not paying you. You know, the notion of going home and getting paid, I just couldn't wrap my head around it. And I was so envious. But I was also envious of people who, like, fell off a ladder and were getting disability.
Yeah, Mitchell Walters. You know Mitchell Walters? He hurt his back jumping out of a plane.
Right.
Like on the slide. They collected money for years from that. I remember being jealous of that. Yes.
It is a real mentality thing when you're jealous of guys who've injured themselves because they get to stay home.
Yeah, they don't have to earn it anymore. I got paid for, we were off the air for 26 months. It was like one of those pay or play things. And I had a contract. At the time I was making like $50,000 a year. And I remember they had agreed to double my contract because there was a bunch of new markets. And before the paperwork got signed, we got fired. So I collected for a few months on my original salary. They paid me for like 6 months, but I missed out on a decent amount of money for a much longer period of time because the paperwork just hadn't been signed by the company when we got kicked off.
Yeah, we had the same agent, Bobby.
That's right.
And it's like, well, they're going to be home for over 2 years, getting paid in full. And I was like, oh, God damn it. 2 years plus. Like, insane.
It made me a better comic, though, because I started doing Tough Crowd when that, we were off the air. So I just did Tough Crowd for 2 years. And then literally the month, Opie and Anthony came back on the month before Tough Crowd ended. Like, it worked out perfectly. But it made me a better comic. It made me write a lot more. So it worked out okay. But it was traumatic at the time. It sucked.
You guys, were you doing mornings or afternoons, or did you switch around?
After, we were doing 3 to 7, and we went to mornings when we went on XM in October of 04.
How brutal was that?
It sucked. I remember trying to convince them to stay in the afternoons. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the best way to, you know, because this way we can...
Well, 3 to 7 is like... 3 to 7 is perfect. Like, the thing about radio is it's 4 hours. It's usually 4 hours. The question is which 4 hours?
Yeah.
And if you can do 3 to 7, it's like you can stay out and party as late as you possibly can. You just have to wake up by 2 in the afternoon. Like, it's all doable. If there is a party, you can always make it because nothing starts before 7. There's no movie premiere you can't go to. There's just nothing you can't do except for miss traffic.
7 o'clock was perfect. For stand-up, it was, because I was doing 4 or 5 spots a night back then, and I would do that, go out, you know, late, fucking just ride around looking at hookers for 3 hours, go to bed at 8 in the morning, get up, exactly what you're saying, get up at like 1:32 in the afternoon. It was perfect. But it also, it made my lifestyle fucked up. Going to mornings made me a normal person.
Yes.
I can go to the bank now, I can do stuff. But you're waking up at 1:30 or 2, running into the studio at 3, being done by 7, you miss everything. Everything's closed.
Yeah, but the mornings, especially for a comic. I mean, did you guys start at 6 a.m.?
Yeah, I mean, so I would get up at 5, going to bed very late, getting up at 5. At one point, we're doing 5 hours, so it was 6 to 11. And now I'm 8 to 11, which is amazing, because getting up at 7 is a huge difference from getting up at 5.
Yeah.
It's a 3-hour show Monday through Thursday. It's great. Like, for a comic, it's a very easy schedule.
Yeah. And it's good because it's true that if you're left to your own devices, you can stray pretty hard. And the schedule usually kind of keeps you not necessarily on the straight and narrow, but at least somewhere on the highway. Like, you're not into a drainage ditch.
Yeah, exactly. You're not looking at fucking... I used to ride around with a piss cup and just look at hookers all night. Like, for hours, I would listen to sports radio. I was depressed because we had gotten thrown off the air. So all night, I would listen to Joe Beningo, who is a local sports guy, or Art Bell. And Art Bell would get you through...
From the Kingdom of Nye.
Yeah, Pahrumph, Nevada.
Right.
You hear Michio Kaku or any of those other... Who is the guy? Richard C. Hoagland would always be on talking about that face on Mars.
Scotty Farrell doing Farrell on the bench or radio?
I don't remember
back then.
I don't remember if he was in New York at the time. He might have been. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. But I will say that Art Bell got me through it because I couldn't listen to comedy radio. I could only listen to something that didn't remind me of what we did. And Art Bell was completely the opposite.
Yeah, Art Bell would have some guy in who was an expert on a Yeti or the Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah.
And they'd get really serious and drill down and get into the weeds about it. And I would do the same thing because I would leave Loveline at midnight and I would put on talk radio and it would be Art Bell coming in. And I think he's passed away.
He died, yeah. But that fucking guy could do a phoner and he could tease you through 4 hours and keep you hooked for 4 hours doing like an ISDN line phoner. He was amazing. Like, he was an amazing interviewer.
How's the piss cup factor in?
Well, because I pee all the time, and so I would be riding around for hours, and I would have a cup with me. I would leave the Comedy Cellar, I would take one of their plastic cups, mm-hmm. and then just whiz into it. So I have to stand outside and, you know, get arrested for a misdemeanor. Most nights I was just looking. I was just riding around like a ritual, just looking at hookers, not even picking them up.
Is there still a high concentration of hookers in Manhattan?
No, not really. I mean, again, I haven't looked in so long, but I don't even see them accidentally anymore. Like, they used to be up by... there was some up on 10th Avenue by the Lincoln Tunnel when you come in. There was a Hess gas mm-hmm. station. A lot of the girls would hang around. Down in the Meatpacking District, there was a lot of on the east side around Lexington Avenue in the 30s, but not in years and years and years.
It's funny. Your answer, the way you sighed, the look of disgust on your face when I ask you if there's a lot of hookers. Like, if you talk to some old guy who's an old metal fabricator, and I'll go, kids today, do they know how to work the English wheel? Do they know how to shape aluminum? And I'll go, they don't get that same look of disgust, but about the lack of prostitutes.
Hell in a handbasket. Yeah, it's I would come in and just, again, it was the ritual of looking, and if I couldn't believe it. But yeah, New York was a little different back then. You knew it was changing when you started to see girls riding around in cars and trucks, and mm-hmm. they would solicit you from their car, and you mm-hmm. just knew that, oh, thank you. You knew something was changing.
How many nights would you look versus squeeze the trigger and make a purchase?
It would depend on if I knew that. Like, a lot of times I would just get regular people I would see. Like, I would see, you know what I mean? Sometimes I would ride around for 2 weeks and not get anybody. Sometimes it'd be 3 nights in a row. But I got very attached to people, so I would have to look for somebody I knew or mm-hmm. that I had met up with before.
Yeah. And then also there's the kind of undercover cop situation, right? I mean, could you make them?
I was always so paranoid and careful that I would never say anything stupid from the car. I would always, hey, you know, you want to just talk a little bit? And if they go, hey, what are you looking for, honey? Like, I would never say anything that would have gotten me in trouble. I was mm-hmm. always careful about making sure that they were actually working and not cops.
I'm looking down at something that's pretty impressive here, which is you dropped out of high school your senior year.
Yeah.
You're sent to rehab. Still voted class clown.
But I didn't make it into the yearbook. This guy Joe did. They gave me the class clown award, but they didn't want the photo. I guess it's hard to have the class clown with a fucking bandage on his wrist. Didn't like go with the yearbook theme. Mm-hmm. So I never got into the yearbook, but the people in the committee were like, you won by a landslide. You got more votes than anybody. But they, I'm actually glad they didn't put me in because that made me so resentful and angry. It kind of motivated me to, I think, to do stand-up almost. That was a motivating factor.
This is interesting because you and I were both class clown, and we both got jacked in the yearbook.
Oh, you too?
No. I didn't get jacked in the yearbook for class clown. That there was a picture of me in class clown, as class clown, mm-hmm. in the yearbook. But it's interesting. People think all this sort of participation trophy and all this equity and everything is 10 minutes old. It goes back a right. little bit. So I played high school football. I was the defense. I won defensive player of the year, whatever. Best defensive player on my team. So I was the best. I got the trophy.
Sure.
I didn't get it for best defensive lineman or best defensive back. I got best defensive player trophy
overall, yeah.
overall on our team. In the yearbook, in my position at linebacker on defense, is a picture of Alex Richardson.
Why?
Because they said what we're going to do is we're going to take a picture of the starting offense, and I was on the offense. And then they went, we're going to take a picture of the starting defense, but nobody who was in the offense picture could go over it. We're going to use new people. We're going to spread the love around.
Right.
So for posterity, for time immemorial, if you look in that yearbook, you'll see Alex Richardson standing in my linebacker position, who got best defensive player, but not pictured on defense.
Isn't it weird how that little shit, even though as adults we know, like, who cares? You look back and there is still a part that goes, fuck you. Like, it's still annoying.
I never think about it. I've let it go completely.
Oh, I have not. No. I'm glad you have.
I'm still bitter.
I know you are.
But so, and now, who was this kid who took your spot?
His name was Joe Amore.
Because my kid, Alex, was on the team. He just backed me up.
Joe Amore was a funny guy.
What's he doing with it now?
I don't know. It's funny. I don't know. I have no idea what Joe is doing, but I do think he was so at least they gave it to a guy who everybody liked and had a good sense of humor. Like, he wasn't a tool, but I mean, I really worked hard for that award, and I just got fucked on it. But I fucked myself by going to rehab. I mean, you know.
What'd you go to rehab for?
Just drinking and cutting my wrists. So they sent me to rehab for 28 days, Princeton, New Jersey.
They is whom?
My family. Mm-hmm. I was 17 at the time, so they said it was either that or a long-term facility. So I said, all right, I'll take that.
And as people know, I've met your family.
That's right.
And we're backstage in, I'll think, Atlantic City. I think we're in Atlantic City. Borgata.
Was that with Leno there or no?
Yeah, I was with Leno. Yeah. And I remember you bringing your parents backstage to meet Jay, who was gracious.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, oh, man, what kind of shit show is this going to be? Because, you know, you think Jim Norton's parents.
Yeah.
And not Jim's personally a very nice guy, but debaucherous.
You. Yeah.
And so you think, well, where did he come from? And then your parents are like from Knott's Berry Farm. Like, they're from Spillikin Corners. Like, they are provincial. You know what I mean? And they look very normal. And I never really got over that.
They always take people off guard. Like, my parents, people are always surprised mm-hmm. that those are my mother and father because of how I am. So, yeah, they always kind of – they're a great representation of me, and I'm a terrible representation of them. They mm-hmm. always take people off guard.
So how did it get there? How do we get from them to you?
You know, it's funny. I don't know. Like, looking back, was it because back then you weren't as supervised? Like, you know, I was such a little dirty boy running around doing dirty little boy things with other kids in the neighborhood. So I don't know. Like, did they know what I was doing? You know, hiding under the porches, blowing my friend. Like, I don't know if they knew or not. But, I mean, it started in Edison, New Jersey, very, very young.
And the cutting on yourself, where did that...
That was melodrama, you know, emo before it was emo. You know what I mean? Just a suburban angst. Embarrassing, yeah. Fucking douchey, notice me, you know. It's almost like I would never have been a school shooter, but I understand that mentality. Like, I cleared my school with a bomb threat.
Oh, really?
At one point. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's all. Well, look at that picture. That's me when I was 7. I look like Dahmer with my parents and my sister. Yeah. My dad looks about as happy as he should be to be sitting next to me.
You got the wood paneling and everything. Your dad's got a blazer and Sansibel slacks. Like, your mom's wearing a sweater vest. Like, it was very normal looking, although when you go back, and I don't know if you guys do this, but when you go back, and was your sister sort of the pleaser of the family? Was she trying to keep people together? I'm saying that because she's smiling in the picture.
No, she, I don't think she, like, she didn't know, like, I'm 7 years older than her, so I was just the older brother. Like, I don't think she knew what a weirdo I was. You know, I mean, it was, none of it was in the house. I would always leave the house for stuff. So I don't think she really knew. She just, you know, she probably just thought she was in a nice, normal family. And my parents are like, they're nice, normal people. And she's very normal too.
Yeah. Or maybe we don't know enough about them.
You know, that scares me. That does scare me. Yeah. It frightens me. Cause it's like, well, if this type of stuff is a genetic, do you learn certain things at home? Like, I don't think so. My dad was working and my mom was pretty normal, you know, stay-at-home mom.
So class clown means you always sort of had that motor, that sense of humor.
Sure.
That, you know, was it about attention or was it just about an ability?
It was about attention and getting girls. It was the one thing I didn't feel like insecure around girls with, as I was funny. And people are nice to you when you're funny, because nobody wants, in high school, everybody's so scared of socially being ostracized or humiliated, that if you can make fun of people, that everyone's nice to you, because nobody wants to be embarrassed by being made fun of. The black guys are nice to you, the jocks are nice to you, the drug addicts are nice to you, because everybody kind of likes that you're funny, and they don't want to be mocked in front of the other students.
So, you know, you developed that sense of humor, but you also had the ability. Otherwise, everyone would just develop it. Like, you had to have some sort of intelligence, some sort of gift. You could turn a phrase.
Yeah, I don't know what it's from. I remember as a kid, like really young, writing stories. And I always liked, like, I would always try to write my stories funny. And I would do that like, gee whiz, don't read mine. But, you know, I wanted her to read mine, because I always looked at it like getting that laugh, you know, that feeling you get from people laughing. It was like, it was a high. It was a fucking high. But I don't know where it comes from, or if it's a reaction to being bullied. Like, I don't know.
Did you, so you went to rehab for 27 days.
17, yeah. When I was 17, yeah.
When you're 17. And you did not graduate with your high school class?
No, I stopped going to school. I just kind of fell apart mentally. I was sober for a little while, but I kind of started drinking the second I got out of rehab. Drank for another year. I just didn't want to go back. I there was nothing there for me anymore. I didn't connect to any of it. I didn't care about any of it. I didn't enjoy it.
As you were celebrating Jim's 54th birthday today, how much of the drive, I don't mean just sexual drive, I just mean kind of drive, like I'm going out, you know, I'm whoring, or I'm browsing, or whatever it is, you know, just that kind of motivation that ends up getting you into trouble. But just that kind of drive and that motivation, has that waned over the years?
I mean, as you get older a little bit, it does. And you start accumulating more shit in life, so it's not as important to go out. And I'm like, what do I want? That's why I got fat again. I just can't stop eating, because, like, I'm trying not to watch porn. Like, I've been on kind of like a dry thing.
Porn diet.
I'm trying, man. Yeah, because it's so consuming. It fucks you up so badly. Like, this, I mean, the time you spend with it. So I'm trying not to do it. So I started eating again, because I'm like, you got to have something. But that drive is still there, but you accumulate stuff. So you start looking at things, well, what do I want? And then you realize you don't want anything. I want the drug of getting something. Mm-hmm. Like that warm menthol feeling you get when you buy something new. It's like, or it's like the same as getting a text or a girl sending you a nude photo. So I know it's all just a dopamine hunt.
Mm-hmm. How much time would you spend with porn?
Hours. Like, just, you know, at times I'd get home in the morning and you'd start watching it. And then I would realize, I got to leave. I got the cellar tonight. You know what I mean? I would, you know, sometimes 6-7 hours, sometimes less, sometimes more. It was very, very consuming.
Yeah.
Because you're always looking for that next thing.
You know, no, I know.
You know?
No, I guess there's two sort of mentalities with that. Some is that what's next that becomes consuming.
Yeah.
The other is maybe, well, first things first, you know, you need a schedule. You just need, you need a schedule. And I don't want to offer you tips for beating off, but but here goes. If you can put, pardon the pun, a hard out in there. Like, you know, hey, the podcast is at 10 a.m., The commute is half an hour. I got to be out of here by 9:30 latest. Don't hop on to Pornhub until 9:10. That'll sort of solve the problem. The problem is the seller set tonight's at 9:45. It's 10:45 in the morning, and all I got between me and then is Grubhub.
Right.
That's where you get fucked up.
Right. But if I could put a hard out and stick to it, I wouldn't need a hard out. Mm. The fact is, that's the problem. I put hard outs like, hey, you'll just do this for a little while. But then all of a sudden, you stumble on that one. God,
What do you think about a porn app called Hard Out, where we only give you 20 minutes and then we lock you out for a day?
I think that's an awesome idea that people would find a workaround to. Like they do, like when you give somebody, there's a lot of people who will give somebody a password to like those net nanny things where they stop you from looking at porn or adult content. A lot of guys do that to keep themselves from looking at adult content, but there's always a workaround.
No, there's a workaround. Basically what we're saying is this is my porn version of Weight Watchers, Deal a Meal, or a wheel where you count calories. Like, you're on the honor system, but you've got the wheel. You've signed up for the system. You get 1,800 calories and a shake in the morning. Like, you can work around. You can go to the Arby's. I can't stop you.
Right.
But can you stick with this sensible program?
Yeah, I would say I probably would not be able to stick with the sensible program.
So is it just no porn then?
Yeah. Although I've been on Twitter lately, just looking at a couple of different profiles, like looking at a couple of things, like perusing. Mm-hmm. And even that, I'm like, it's the same thing. What the fuck are you doing? Like, there's nothing new here. You're just looking at the same thing you've watched 10,000 times. So, yeah, I avoid doing that because it's just my own weakness makes me sick. You ever see the end of The Bad Lieutenant? I'm so fucking weak. Like,
right.
That's kind of how I am.
See, I sit up here and judge people like you, but
sure.
I've seen Con Air 127 times. I don't know if it's, I'm not sure if my use of my time is that much better.
It's better because you're watching Con Air is not going to remove all intimacy from friends and partners. You're not going to miss family functions or feel guilty hugging your parents because you just watch Con Air. Like this.
Sorry, I got lube on your sweater, Dad. I was watching Con Air. You don't know how I watch Con Air.
Yeah.
I watch with a great amount of vigor.
It just makes me feel dirty when I watch it. Yeah, Con Air, I think, is a lot healthier for you because you're not going down a rabbit hole of other shit.
Mm-hmm. So when's the last time you watched porn?
I mean, again, perusing, like, gently little things I do occasionally, like, on Twitter. But actually watched porn, I would say December.
Oh, really?
Yeah, December.
Wow.
Yeah, I haven't jerked off since December either. And that's a really hard one.
Really?
Yeah, not since December.
Are you in a relationship?
Yes.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so that kind of, it also is like, if you're going to be in a relationship, you don't want to just, even if you're not cheating, you still like, you're not there. You're not present. Like, I'm much more present when I'm not doing that stuff. And I feel better.
Are you in therapy?
Yes, but I've been going for a couple of years, and he's a really good therapist. But it's funny, I just talked to him last week. I said, I'm going to take the summer off because I'm doing well. He goes, that's a great idea. He goes, you don't even have to come to therapy if you don't want to at this point. But I'm like, no, I'll probably come back in September. But just to take a couple of months off so it doesn't feel like a burden. You know, you don't want to dread it when you have to go to your fucking therapist. But he's good.
I've gone to therapists a lot, but I've never dreaded it. I've always kind of looked forward to it.
I dread the time I have to. I don't like any type of schedule. I don't like having to be anywhere every week. Like, oh, fuck, I got to do this on tape this and tape that on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and I like being, like, it's like wanting, just like an 8-year-old child. Like, I don't want to do anything that I have to
do. You don't have kids, right?
No.
Yeah, so that's my theory is with comedians. Like, I think about guys like you, Jeff Ross, Doug Benson, Sarah Silverman. It's like combined age 500 years old, not a kid.
Right.
Between them, and people are sort of like, do they don't like kids? And I'm like, no, they like kids. It's just they like their schedule. And once you get kids, then your schedule's out the window.
That's right. I hate obligation. And I don't like kids. I don't hate children, but I have no parental instinct. I was just talking to somebody about this. Like, my girlfriend wants to get a dog. Mm. And I'm like, maybe, but you'll have to walk the fucking, like, I know, like, I don't like any type of an obligation to anything if I don't have to. And
that'd be a good name for a young black kid.
What?
Deobligation.
Deobligation with an apostrophe?
Yeah.
It's a great name.
Fitting. Solid. No one else has it.
The obligation.
Probably being the league in 19 short years.
Yeah, I'm not, I have no desire for kids. I've never wanted to have kids.
But is that, I mean, look, everyone is like you and the aforementioned comedians I've talked about. Like, it can't be a coincidence. There has to be a gene in comedians who just go, I want to go out at night, I want to do my shit, and I want to have brunch on Wednesdays at noon, right, and then see a matinee. Now, every human is wired that way to a certain degree. I have it.
Sure.
Everyone has it. Every mom of three, if you go, don't you wish you could just put these kids in a cooler for a year and just go out to brunch whenever you wanted? They'd go, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
But yet some people cross over into the life of obligation, you know, yes, into the 9 to 5, into the kids, into all the shit that goes along, all the obligations that go along with that life. And then others, not, they just never go in there. But is that a product of not wanting kids, or is it a product of narcissism, of just being like so self-absorbed that like I have to do what I want to do when I want to do it?
It may be a combination of things, but I actually don't like kids. Like, and again, but it's not like a yuck, fuck kid, I hate them. I when I see kids, I'm like, oh my, I get why you love your kid so much. He's beautiful and it's adorable. But I just don't, I'm not a person who likes to spend time with kids. I'm not a person who's ever had that instinct. Maybe it is a bit narcissistic, but I just, I've never had that knock or that tap in your brain that says I should do this. So I figure I'm doing the right thing, because too many people have them who don't get that knock, and then they turn out to be shit parents. So I would rather kind of just do what I want to do, knowing that I'm not subjecting a child to a father who's like kind of indifferent to it.
Well, there's also the other side of the coin, which is the narcissism of having a bunch of kids and giving them your name and all that kind of stuff. And you always talk about a legacy, like my name will carry on, you know, and all that. So there's kind of another pendulum swing in that swings in having kids and carrying on a name or legacy or whatever that is.
Yeah, no, I could care less about my legacy, about anybody. I don't care about a little me carrying it on, because chances are he's just going to fucking embarrass me anyway. So no, I don't have any desire to have a little me carry a legacy on. None. It's never occurred to me.
So you sound like an atheist.
Kind of, in a way. I'm an optimistic atheist. I want to be wrong.
Like, yeah, me too.
I want to believe in God. I still pray. I'm still hoping that there's something that we're missing. Like, I can't stand religious conservatism. Like, that's kind of force feeding everybody a thought, or no condoms, no gay sex, no trans. But I kind of want there to be something. I don't want to be right.
What is your prep for the show?
A radio show?
Yeah.
I walk in. That's it. I'm very bad at that, as fans will point out. I don't like, Sam is very good at like organizing stories. I don't enjoy doing that. It feels like homework to me, and I'm not good at it.
No, yeah. But, and this is the other kind of crossroads for comedians, shit feels like homework. You know, there's nothing worse
than sure.
You know, someone that cast you in a sitcom. Next thing you know, you got 44 pages, and 23 of them are highlighted with your character name, and they go, we're doing a run-through tomorrow, see if you can be off. And you're just at home going, fucking night ruined.
Yeah.
Feels like homework. This is all the shit I was horrible at. This is why I was a horrible student. But then there's that other part, like stand-up, where you go, you know, you're up there for an hour. No one wants to see you go, hey, what's up, for an hour.
Right.
You know, you have to write, kind of commit things to memory, repeat, you know, work, improve, hone, you know, things like that. So then you do that in your stand-up. And so, like, with the radio, for me, I just carry around, like, sort of buck slips, and I'll just sort of see something, and I'll go, oh, yeah, that might be funny. That's a thought, you know? So there's a kind of fine line between wanting to improvise, wanting to be kind of loose and play it like a center fielder, like, I don't know, whichever way the ball's going, I'll go. Versus I'm the center fielder who never trains and doesn't work out and, you know, not in good shape. So how do you kind of strike that balance?
Okay, that's well, what we do is we get like news stories every night. So I always read the news stories we get, and it's all like, okay, we can talk about this 10 different things we can talk about. Or if I have a thought on something, yeah, I'll talk about that. But I mean, like when I see radio guys do prep, like they have a bunch of stuff in front of them, and like we're going to do this in this block and that block, and that. It's also because it's a conversation too. Like I'm hanging out with Sam and we have Travis and we have Troy and we have Mike Montone and we have Saray who's our intern. Like there's a bunch of people to react off of. So it's a little bit easier just to kind of go in there and go, all right, we have these stories to talk about. I want to talk about what happened to me last night or something weird I did. But a lot of times I have no idea what I'm going to talk about until we start the show and I'm just talking about what I did the day before or Sam is talking about something, which is partially lazy on my part. But I kind of like only having the loose idea.
How's your girlfriend handle your foibles, I guess we'll call them, and or does she want to move forward? She want to get married?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's she's fine with all of it. She doesn't care about the past. Yeah, it's like one, that's the type of person I need. Like I can't date somebody who's, hey, you did what? Like, I just can't. They're going to wind up being very disappointed very fast because it's all out there.
Right.
So, you know, I'm pretty open with that stuff with whoever I date. I tell them, you know, or just, you know, it's easy to find the stuff I've talked about on stage for the last 30 years. I mean, it's some of it's a lie, but a lot of it's not.
But not the first date, right? You kind of ease into it a little bit.
No. You hope, though, by the time you have the first date, one advantage to having a public life is that it's all out there. And everybody looks each other up before they go out. I mean, it's just the way things are done. So I always figure they know something about me going in. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to not have to explain it. The embarrassing thing is when you're dating someone and their family starts watching your stuff. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, my mother saw the Chip podcast. It's fucking humiliating. Like, it's really embarrassing.
Your mom saw which podcast? Oh, you mean like, her mom?
Her mom was, yeah. She doesn't get it. She, like, I know, it stinks. Or she, my mother saw you talk. Like, that's the worst part is somebody's family. Or like the first time I was on Opie and Anthony with Dice on the phone,
God.
I was talking about golden showers. And I remember my father called me and he goes, your mother and I were listening yesterday. And I was like, yeah. And he goes, yeah, yeah. But I told her you're only kidding about that stuff. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm just kidding. We both knew I wasn't kidding. But that's where it gets embarrassing.
Right.
It's like my parents really didn't know that. And then that's the part that sucks.
I was at my grandfather's wake and I was sitting at my grandmother's house and I was sitting next to one of their old dirtbag friends. Something about those women, sort of bohemian old women.
Yeah.
They wear huge amber beads.
Yeah.
And clamp-on earrings, but they're trying to hip it up and they have an opinion on everything. And their first name's Trudy or something.
Yeah.
And
with an I.
Yeah. And she was sitting next to me and we're trying to remember my grandfather. And she's like, I saw you on TV the other night, and you were talking for a half hour about making a bowel movement, and I said, and the other thing too, you know what I love about these cunts? They're always like, I saw you on TV last night or the other night, and then you go, what was it? Was it MTV? And they go, I don't know. Was it comedy show? TV, bitch.
Yeah.
What channel
what
was
channel
it on?
What channel were you watching? Yeah.
Or shut the fuck up. Why am I guessing what channel it was? So she was like, you talked about making a bowel movement for an hour, you know? And I was like, okay, that's impossible. I may have made a joke, a fart joke or something on Loveline, but no. 1 hour, that's all you talked about. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm on TV a lot. Was it like a Tonight Show thing or something? I don't know. They never know. It's untraceable. All they know is for, 37 minutes uninterrupted, you talked about taking a shit on TV. And it's like, I don't know what you're talking about. There's something, and they just keep going and going. And I don't know why they want to make you feel uncomfortable. Certainly your dad wasn't doing that.
No.
Your dad was trying to assuage his own sense of...
Keep his own image of me with somewhat intact. I think trying to keep his image of the fact that his son doesn't want to drink piss out of a cup. Yeah.
has he ever said, like, hey, just no more talk about... Or go by go by the last name Norris, would you, for a change? What's so bad about Norris?
Yeah, a less embarrassing. Yeah, no, I think they've gotten accustomed to it. But there are bits I will edit when they're in the audience. Like I hate when my family comes to see me because there are bits
horrible.
I'll cut out.
Oh no,
I have to because I'm just too embarrassed. Like yes. The bits work. But I know they're fine with it. Like, my parents are great. They don't give a shit. They've seen everything I've done. They're beyond, they're not going to be shocked at this point. But I'm just too embarrassed to do it and then see them after.
Will they, well, like they were at the Borgata, right?
Right.
Was that was for your show?
I don't remember. I'm going to guess it was probably for something I was doing. Yeah, I was probably probably in the music box or something.
Jay was working the big theater.
Event Center, yeah.
I was working the medium theater. I guess.
Yeah.
Or he was doing the 2,000 seater. I was doing the 1,000 seater. And then you were working the music box.
It might have been. I mean, there's, I don't know how many rooms they have, but the one room I do, I've only done the music box at the Borgata.
So your parents there. Probably there to see.
Possibly, yeah.
Jay backstage. Jay's such a good dude.
He's a great guy, yeah.
You know, that show. You want to know what a good guy Jay Leno is? It was that show that he said, he called me. I was in Canada before, and he was like, I don't know why he found out where I was. And he was like, you want to catch a ride on the way home? And I was like, you know, I poor person thinking. I'm like, share an Uber to the hotel or something? Catch a ride on the way back. I said, what do you mean? He had a private jet, you know? And his way of doing shows is he flew in that night, going to do a show, turn around,
yep,
and leave that night. And he's such a cool dude that even though I was catching a ride with him on his private jet, I said, well, what time's your show, Jay? And he's like, my show's 8 to 10. And I was like, oh, my show's 9 to 11 or whatever it was. My show started an hour later. And he went, oh, I'll wait. And
really?
I remember thinking, because you just want to get the fuck out of there. That's the whole plan of the private jet, you know. And we left, you know, just drove right out of the back of the Borgata, drove to a private airport 3 miles away, walked right out, got into the plane. Jay walked in, walked on the plane, said to the cabin guys, like, hey, do you have those cookies you had on the way out? And the guy's like, no, we're out of those cookies. Like, oh, okay, sorry. He didn't say anything. He just sat in the back of the plane reading an Auto Week. Of course, I was like, anyone else on this plane going to have a drink? Because it's Saturday night. We just did a show. And they're like, no, we got some other cookies. You know? And I'm like, oh. So I felt super self-conscious because I'd like opened the little fridge, like fumbling around for a bottle of Smirnoff, you know, and I look and Jay and his guys are all just looking at me and I'm like, hey, we did a show, right? We should have a drink. And no, we're good. Like, Jay, any of your guys want a drink? It's Saturday night. We're on a private jet. Like, no, we don't want anything. I was like, all right, I'll just take a couple more here. Then. And I was like pouring myself a little drinks. We landed in Van Nuys at like 3:30 in the morning. He drove me to my house.
Did he really?
To my house, way out of the way.
He's a great guy. I've only talked to him once. It was probably about a year ago. He just wanted to call and catch up and say hello. And he really is. That was a great show to do. It was a fun show to do. He always gave you complete freedom to do what you wanted. Like, I know people thought the Tonight Show was more of a mom and pop show, but he gave me more freedom than any other late night show I ever did with material or with content or, you know, my fucking, the stuff I talk about. They were always like, if I could just do it.
Their
network doesn't like it, they'll take it out. Like, they were always, him, Debbie Vickers, they were always great.
Well, let me tell you about Simply Safe. Does anything matter more than safety for you and your loved ones and your family? Well, of course not. So that's why so many people choose Simply Safe over other home security companies. I trust them. I recommend Simply Safe. I've been using these guys for years. They've been a sponsor for years. Peel and stick. Put the sensors anywhere. No wires to pull or holes to drill. Batteries last up to 10 years. 24/7 professional monitoring. Simply Safe. Their agents dispatch police or fire responders, or I should say first responders, who could be firemen, the moment a threat is detected, even if you're not home or can't be reached. Just $1 a day. No long-term contracts or hidden fees, and you can customize the perfect system for your home in just a few minutes at simplysafe.com/Adam. Go there today. Get a free indoor security camera plus 20% off with interactive monitoring at simplysafe.com/Adam.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Be back with more Jim Norton right after this. Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All month long, the biggest movies are streaming free on Pluto TV's Popcorn Summer Movies. Watch star-studded blockbusters like Titanic and Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Or fall in love with charming rom-coms like Hitch and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. The best part? Pluto TV is 100% free. No credit cards, not even a sign-up. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies, TV shows, and more. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.
Concrete. Oh, this is good stuff, and you need it. Your body makes half the creatine it needs, and the other half comes from your diet. But most American diets are low in creatine-rich foods. Concrete, patented creatine, HCL, is the favorite creatine of elite, well-informed athletes, the number one bioavailable creatine and the only microdosing creatine. Just one small scoop per 100 pounds. So if you're 200 pounds, put in two small scoops. Comes right with the container. Creatine is required for functional energy in every cell. Your brain uses about 20% of the creatine in your body. Your immune cells need it to protect you. Heart cells need it to pump. Lung cells need it to breathe. It's concrete, right, Dawson?
Take control of your health, both body and mind. Build a better you with Concrete. Register now at con-crete.com/podcast. That's con-crete.com/podcast for a chance to win a $500 Walmart Visa gift card available now online and in-store at Walmart. Concrete is truly life-changing and performance-enhancing.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
People of Earth, it's time for another installment of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month, we got things that will take care of your body, soul, and scrotum. Like a sample pack of Tame the Beast Nut Butter, a blend with Tuck Everlasting anti-aging and anti-chafing ingredients that will keep your sack high and tight. We've also got the great Dano's Seasoning, who will make each and every kind of meat taste even better, whether it's beef, pork, or your fellow man. Dano's is low sodium and no sugar, so even Vinny will approve. We've also got Nude Mints to not only freshen your breath, but your gut biome, too. These incredible products and a bottle of your choice can be found at CorollaDrinks.com for only $25. So prep your mailbox. A new month of Adam's Monthly Nut has arrived.
Back with Jim Norton. He's got a SiriusXM show, Jim Norton and Sam Roberts. It's 8 a.m. Eastern. That is on SiriusXM channel 103 and a podcast, Chip Chipperson podcast as well. That's available wherever you listen to podcasts. Talk UFC, right, with former champ Matt Serra, right?
We do that twice a week, yeah, Monday and Wednesday, UFC Unfiltered.
You big UFC guy?
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I love it. I it's something I'll never be able to do, and I'm so annoyed that I've been doing the podcast for like 5 or 6 years now, and I've got access to all these fighters, and I don't train. I'm such a fucking idiot. Like, Jimmy Rivera called me, and he got me to start training, and I was going over to Tiger Shulman because it was Jimmy's school, and he was giving me private lessons. It was amazing, and then the pandemic hit, and of course, I just fattened up and stopped training, but I really want to do it again because I have access to these people, and I don't take advantage of it. I'm so stupid.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing about being in our position, and I don't say that in a braggadocious way, but it's just you get stuff, people give you stuff, you have access to people, and
yeah,
there's
lucky
stuff you could do or should do. And it's like, can you keep up with and take advantage of all the whatever? Like somebody somebody will give you a gift certificate and go, hey, man, we do that thing where we put the tents on top of the cars and you can park it down and we to Yosemite and you can stay there for two nights and you go, oh, this is awesome. And then you throw it in your drawer and you're like, you never go. It's like all the things you could do, all the things you'd have access to, all the certificates, all the guys, you know, how many guys, you know, just go like I was, interviewing, and you just interview everyone, but like I was interviewing Tom Cruise's training pilot, stunt pilot, the guy who films, flies in the jet, films all the Top Gun stuff and whatever, you know. And like almost every time when we're done, they go, hey, man, just give me a buzz. We'll take you up in the jet. We'll go out and have the, I think there's this thing called, I don't know, the $500 burger or something. We just go for the day to up north to the Bay Area and fly the jet and have a burger or whatever and come back or whatever. And you just go, that would be awesome. We're never going to do it.
Yeah.
But that would be awesome. And if I were 19, I would just follow you out to your car and get into your car and just sleep in your car until we were going to go fly in the jet. Yeah. Like there's so much. It's almost like goods too. It's like so much junk, you know, shows up from Amazon and there's this thing and you got to blow it up. You put it in the pool and the kids and whatever. And it's like, it's never leaving the box. It's like this weird embarrassment of riches.
Yes. And the thing, but I don't take advantage of much of it, but this is something that I'm mad that I don't like, because this is like a thing I want to do. It's like sometimes people will offer you a perk or something that's a great perk, but it's not in my line of sight. It's not what I was thinking about doing. But training is something I was thinking about doing. Matt took me over to Henzo's personally, introduced me to everybody at Henzo's place. And I'm like, these are some of the best jiu-jitsu fighters in the world. And I would, you know, I would have access to good people. And I just... my schedule, I'm bit, you know, that's what's annoying. It's because it's something I want to do and I still prevent myself. When I get a pair of sunglasses, I don't feel obligated to wear them. Like, you know what I mean? Or when someone will give me like, hey, try this. It'll help you drop a few pounds, or it's a new shake you can have. That type of shit I don't ever take advantage of. Like you said, the coupons and stuff, the trips. But that is something I kind of want to do and I don't do it.
Well, you don't do it right now, but you may do it.
I'm 54. I don't see it happening. I don't. I was interviewing Forrest Griffin one time. He's like, yeah, you're too old, man. He told me like 2 years ago, you're too old. And he was right. He was being honest. I'm too old. But I still want to train just in case I get attacked on the subway. Just, you know, a little bit of basic white belt knowledge.
Mm. Well, yeah, you're too old to, you know, launch a career in mixed martial arts. We're not too old to learn a couple of holds.
How old was Bourdain? Bourdain started taking it when he was in his 50s, too. And he actually was maybe in his late 40s. But, I mean, he might have been 50 when he started taking. He was actually training with Henzo over at his place. And he got to be pretty good at it. And I would see him at fights all the time. So, yeah, he's a guy who was in his 50s, I guess, that started and fell in love with it.
Everyone loves Anthony Bourdain. There's something... I think there's a kind of a voyeurism in that he did and was doing exactly what he wanted to do. And there's something really attractive about that to other human beings.
Yes. And he was honest about it. Like, you know, I think he was a heroin addict first. And then he has this great show where he's like, you know, eating food. And he would always tell you what he thought. You always felt like he was genuine. I think that's the thing with Bourdain that was so attractive, is you felt like he was a genuine guy. And he was a great interview. We had him in quite a few times, and I'm sure you talked to him. He was an amazing interview. He could talk about anything.
I don't think I ever interviewed him.
Really? He was just one of those guys, because he could talk about any location you wanted to talk about, any thing to do at that location. It's like fucking Mike Rowe. Mm-hmm. Mike Rowe you could talk to for 6 months, because he's done so many different things, and he's an opera singer, and he worked and shoveled dog shit for his show. Like, he's done everything. So he's a guy who you could just, you know, talk to. Bourdain was like that.
Yeah. You think about all those people who kill themselves and you go, why?
But I get why. Because having been very depressed, I get, not that I think it's a smart move, but in those moments, nothing matters. Like, nothing feels right. Nothing, anything people can tell you about your life. Yeah, but this and yeah, but that. Those are all just outside things that there's no mental connection to in those moments. In those moments when you're spiraling, the only thing that's real is this place that you're falling into. It's this weird feeling you get in your body. I talked about this weird menthol drip. Your whole body feels it. It's a terrible feeling, but that's the only logical answer.
How are you celebrating your birthday, champ?
You know, I'm going to probably grab a belt.
Pull out your cock.
Yeah, I'm going to David Carradine it.
I've said it once. I've said it 1,000 times. If I found David Carradine hanging in that, where was he?
His closet, I think.
He was in a closet.
With a wig and thigh highs.
Like in Thailand. Mm. I'll tell you what I would have done, and I mean it. I would have put him, I would have taken him down. I would have dressed him in a red, white, and blue gi. I would put nunchucks in his hands and cross them on his chest and laid him on top of the bedspread. And I would have said, that's how I found him.
I would have taken a photo with him hanging and said, I've never been prouder to be next to someone. What a great way to go out. It's just such, it's just honoring your fetish. It's a waste because you got to die doing it. But just like, that's a guy who knew what he liked. That was how this guy likes to jerk.
Well,
off.
You know, people always say he died doing what he loved, and they're talking about parachuting. You know what I mean? This is yeah. The ultimate die doing. You ever get into the autoerotic asphyxiation?
No, not though? At all. I've been choked by girls before. It feels really good, but the idea of doing it myself, it's not the sensation. It's like it's the fact that she's doing it and the sensation.
Right. Oh,
I see. It's a combination of the mental, or like having a girl put her foot in your mouth or something. You know, just cutting your breath off, you know, face sitting. But the idea of just my throat being closed, you know, like I don't shove a sock in my mouth when I'm alone to simulate somebody sitting on my face. I just breathe comfortably.
Smart.
But you know what I mean? For him, it was the idea that
I don't know. I think you should have kids because it's that kind of sage advice.
Hey, I would tell him, like, look, you know what I mean? If someone can't sit on your face, don't shove a sock in your mouth. It's not the same thing.
Yeah.
But there's no sensation I like that much. He liked that sensation, I guess. But if you, I've never put on thigh highs and jerked off. That's just a weird thing for me to think. It's not, I don't judge it, but it just never would turn me on. I put on thigh highs with girls. Like, I'll do that to be dirty. Mm-hmm. It's all fine there, but not alone.
Well, I think, and I don't know, because, you know, my grandmother gave me a speech about it when I was, like, 16, and I just remember going, like, ugh, fucking coming from you. Like, really? Can we find someone younger and a little more attractive to give me this speech? Like, she was giving me, like, a safety speech.
Oh,
which I kind of internalized is this what you think of me, or would you give it to any 16-year-old?
Right.
But I never got to the bottom of that. My grandmother had this weird kind of sexuality to her, and she did it for shock value,
right?
I think, and I remember she would say a few things to me when I was younger. You know, tell me about autoerotic asphyxiation.
Really?
Your grandmother? She said little weird things, like she'd go, oh, you have hair on your shins. Now you can have babies. And like it was just stuff where you'd go like, oh, come on, grandma.
Yeah.
It's weird, you know, but
Ruth Gordon. That's Ruth Gordon energy. Is.
Yeah. She said once, never forget it. Her and my grandfather were together for like 45 years. And when my grandfather died, she was really broken up about it for a long time. Like, she was in a funk for, you know, maybe 2 years or something. And she just said to me, she goes, it's completely serious. She goes, everywhere I look in this house, I just see him there. I have something to remind me. I go into his office. I see his typewriter where he used to sit. It reminds me him. I open the closet. I see his overcoat hanging there. And it reminds me of him. I go in the bathroom. I open the cupboard. I see water-soluble lube. It reminds me of it. I'm like, ugh. But in a weird way, she's making a point, which is nothing would remind you more
of
him than the fucking KY tub.
Sure.
But shut up. You just could have grabbed. You had the typewriter. We went with the overcoat. We could have gone with a scarf or cigar box. We went right to the fucking lube.
Water-soluble, too.
Water-soluble.
Big difference. Lube. Yeah, big difference. Not quite as effective. So you know he had probably tried other lubes, and he settled on the water-soluble lube, and which means that Grandma was a snug fit.
Or maybe he was super girthy, and maybe it was less about her and more about him.
Maybe, yeah, maybe he was uncomfortable. Maybe he was uncomfortable and said, let me just lube this up a little bit. But you never want to know that about your grandparents.
Too late.
No, too late.
I know. My buddy Ray, my mom is a weird person, and she had her boyfriend who was like kind of weird. And they slept in separate rooms. I didn't want to know anything.
Right.
I didn't want any questions. And I never asked them where they met. And my buddy Ray found out, like went and said, like, where'd you meet? And he was going to tell me about it. And I was like, they met at Primal Scream Therapy. And I was like, ugh, what the
you
fuck?
You don't want to know that.
Why? Let's get back to the lube, could we?
Yeah, that's uncomfortable. Yeah, picture your mom going in. And doesn't Christina Ricci do that? That's that thing where you just kind of go in like, and it's supposed to heal you?
You screamed. There was a thing in the 70s where it was like they invented something called bataka bats. Those were like those foam red bats. They were in right. The Simpsons, like the first episode of The Simpsons. It beat everyone on. There was like this thing that you had this rage and angst and whatever that was in you. And that if you beat the pillow hard enough and yes. screamed loud enough, it would sort of purge you of it. It was right. like, I've got toxins, so I got to go into a sauna and like sweat them out. But you never sweated them out. You're no. just as pissed off and yeah. angst-filled and shitty as you ever were the second you're done beating on the pillow. But the primal scream was supposed to purge you of that.
Yeah, I guess it was supposed to kind of weed it out of all the nooks and crannies and really get it out. But by the way, we don't store toxins, one 32nd of an inch under our skin. Sweating doesn't get rid of all the bad feelings. It's not how bad feelings work.
We have a kind of gypsy lady approach to like a lot of life, yeah. which is you got to get those toxins, you got to sweat them out, then you got to go scream out your emotions. And it's this weird thing of like emptying a pillowcase that's filled with negativity or yeah. something. That's not how it works. You no. just empty it out. All right, let's put it, stuff the happy in.
Yeah.
We're empty. The angst is out. Now yeah. we'll put in the happy feathers.
It works for a minute. It, again, like you said, it's temporary, but then you got to do it. It's a whole, because people want things fast. People just want to feel better quick instead of realizing, no, this is a, somebody told me years ago, don't try to figure out who you are. Just get rid of all the shit you're not, and whoever you are will just show up. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's a process. That's not like a thing you do once by yelling or by punching a heavy bag. That's something that's like, it's an ongoing thing of not doing certain things that make me feel bad, not doing what makes me feel like a piece of shit. And then, oh, all of a sudden I start to feel better. But it's a process. It's not a one-time, you know what I mean, fucking jump up and down and stomp your feet and it's all better.
Is your new girlfriend, she wanting to get married?
Yes, I think so. We've talked about it. But again, you know, when the time is right, I'm in no rush.
Is she younger?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, stupid question, but you never know.
Yeah.
Considerably?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like how many years?
28.
Oh, that's younger.
Yeah, 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 much younger. I'm not dating somebody my own age. There's something about dating somebody in their late 20s. It just makes me feel younger. I'm deluding myself, basically, into convincing myself I have a lot more life left.
Right.
But I don't.
Right.
You know.
But then you have to explain to her like who Burt Bacharach is.
That's the worst part.
Who Neil Diamond is.
And the fucking references are lost.
Steely Dan was a fucking great band. There's no references.
No.
Yeah.
I have a Take the Money and Run poster. My Woody Allen poster right. signed by Woody. And she's just like, who's that? I'm like,
yeah.
God damn it. I got to explain everything. Richard Pryor. I have a couple of great Richard Pryor photos. No idea who he was.
Really?
No. No.
Do you think that, and then they'll always go, I wasn't even born
yeah.
when Richard Pryor did yeah. Live on the Sunset Strip. Yeah. And it's like, I wasn't born for Vietnam, and I wasn't born
yep.
for the War of 1812, and I wasn't born for when the Edmund Fitzgerald sank. Like
sure.
I wasn't around for a lot of it, but I know. I know about it.
Yes.
I'm aware. Is there a thing with younger people where they don't have that reverence? Like when I was a kid, the whole idea was to act older. See 15-year-olds smoking, pretending like
they were older, you know, references, bands, you know, trying to do old person stuff to pass themselves off as older. Now, every 47-year-old is pretending like they're 26.
Yes, and I think a lot of it is the fact that people have information just thrown at them. Like, don't forget, when we were growing up, too, you couldn't open up your phone and see somebody with a fat ass twerking on TikTok. Or like, there wasn't that type of stuff to look at, so we had to look to other things. And, hey, learning about the Edmund Fitzgerald, or, you know, I was three when Clockwork Orange came out. I couldn't wait to see it. But if I had Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, I probably wouldn't have given a shit about Clockwork Orange, because I'd be getting belted in the face with so much new stuff that there wouldn't be that reverence for the older stuff. Because it loses – it seems to lose value to younger people when they have their own stuff and there's so much of it. Like, you can just scroll and watch 1,000 people doing different things. Like, so I guess that's why that they don't give a shit about our stuff anymore. But they make it very clear that they don't care about our stuff at all. And they don't give a fuck about our music. And I kind of respect that. You know what I mean? I didn't really care about my parents' stuff that much. I wanted to look at older shit because it would enable me to do stuff that I couldn't do. But as far as the things that they loved and the things that were like that meant something to them culturally, I didn't care about either.
So she's going to want to get married.
Yeah, she will.
She may want to have kids.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. Adopt. But I'm not interested. I've told her I don't want them. I'm not interested.
I want to give out some live dates, by the way. Rochester, New York, Comedy at Carlson. That'll be August 12th and the 13th. And then Providence, Rhode Island, Comedy Connection. That'll be September 9th and 10th as well. Jim's got to go down to IHOP, I believe, and get a free breakfast.
Yes. Today. Yes, I am. It's my birthday, and I get a free breakfast so I can get fucking fatter. Not disgusted enough. I can't even look on the monitor how awful I look. I'm really
disgusted.
You
look good. Well, look. Like, you don't look good, but you don't look bad. You look like Jim Norton, which is about the best you can say about Jim Norton, not about other people.
This is as good as it's going to get.
They would get angry if I said you look like Jim Norton, but you look like Jim Norton, and you're a fucking brilliant comedian.
Thank you.
Who makes his living with his mind in his mouth, so who cares what the gunt says?
I know, and she doesn't care. She's like, you look great like this. I hated when you were so skinny. Like, I found a picture of myself recently from like 2016 or whatever, or 2015, and I look like I have fucking cancer. So like, I look better now, but I just want to lose 15-20 pounds, whatever, you know.
All right, well, we'll start tomorrow after your birthday.
Thanks, buddy.
Jim Norton and Sam Roberts show again, 8 a.m. Eastern Time, Sirius XM channel 103, in the podcast, the Chip Chipperson podcast. Until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Jim Norton saying mahalo.
Make sure you get a copy of Adam's new book, Everything Reminds Me of Something, Advice, Answers, But No Apologies. The hard copy and audiobook are available wherever finer books are sold. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and get your tickets to see the Ace Man. Get them right now at adamcarolla.com.
You own, you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All month long, the biggest movies are streaming free on Pluto TV's Popcorn Summer Movies. Watch star-studded blockbusters like Titanic and Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Or fall in love with charming rom-coms like Hitch and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. The best part? Pluto TV is 100% free. No credit cards, not even a sign-up. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies, TV shows, and more. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.